Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Yeah, man. We all love to hear the good news, so we all should rush to hear the good news. Right. But we can just find the good news. And then...
News for your soul. Life-changing broadcasts to souls around the world since January 1997.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Next up on News for the Soul, Planning on Purpose with Stacey Welchers. Let's bring her on to reintroduce herself, her show, and what's up for today. Stacey, welcome back.
Hi, Nicole. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity and the lovely welcome. Today, we're going to be talking about navigating the whole probate scene. Hey, do you know what probate is, Nicole?
In very, very, very general terms, I've never been involved with it. So.
Well, that's a blessing. Anybody you talk to will tell you that's a blessing. That's a blessing. So, you know, it kind of reminds me of the state fair. I'm down in North Carolina, and again, I'm Stacey Welchers. I'm a North Carolina estate planning attorney. I'm the managing partner of Thomas Welchers Law Firm. And all we do is we focus on estate planning and wills and trust, along with this probate aspect. And the reason it reminds me of the state fair, of course, because it's that time of year here in North Carolina. But this year, there is no state fair. Instead, there's something called unfair, which is pretty ironic in 2020, given all that we're looking at. And with unfair, you get to drive up and you're very limited in what you can do and see. And of course, you have to have a mask on and all that good stuff. You know, to me, though, probate is a lot like the state fair, not the unfair, but the state fair. And I want you to hang tight because I'm going to draw those conclusions and just keep you hanging because I want you to know how the state fair is just like probate. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, or maybe you are like Nicole and you don't know exactly what probate is, I want to kind of start back a step. And I want to talk about how do we pass our assets whenever we leave this earth. And it starts with a bunch of different ideas and plans, whatever suits your needs best. But it's very interesting here in the United States in particular because we have a tendency not to plan. Traditionally, a lot of people believe that you should have a will, a last will and testament, as it's formally called. And we procrastinate and we think we're going to live forever and we're too young. And honestly, it's really emotional to think about, or I can't decide if I were to leave the earth today and the world would get my assets and who would be in charge and who would take care of my children. So I want to start with if you do not have a will, all the steps that you can take to try, notice the operative word is try, but to try to avoid that probate process. I think it's probably better to tell you a couple of myths so you'll understand. First of all, when you die, assets are in your name. They don't just automatically pass, even if you do have a will, at least not in North Carolina. And second of all, when you are married, even if you have assets that are joint in terms of the ownership, they do not just automatically pass to your spouse who is the joint. Can you do, if you don't have a will, to try to make the transition easier until you do get a will? Number one, when you have anything that's owned jointly, see if you can put something called an ROS. ROS stands for right of survivorship. See if you can put that on the account or on the asset. Here's how it works. Right of survivorship means when you own it with somebody else, it could be one or more people, you pass away, they automatically get your share. So if I own a piece of property jointly with my sister and I pass away first, she gets the whole thing. Nobody else gets it. If I own a checking account with my spouse jointly and he passes away, I get it all. Nobody else. And you can do that here in North Carolina on a number of things. Of course, checking and savings account, you can do that. You can do that sometimes on things like real estate. You can even do that on vehicles. Big caveat on the vehicles, though, are whoever the joint owners are responsible for whoever's in the accident. So, for example, I have had people who have tried to get around the probate process by doing things like adding their kids to their vehicles. And when the owners or one of the owners were in a car accident, lo and behold, guess who gets sued? The kid and then the other person. So you want to make sure that you have liability protection by the way of insurance. Now, when you talk about investment accounts, individual accounts, brokerage accounts, not IRAs, not 401ks. I'm talking about where you have bought stocks, you have already paid the taxes, the income taxes on the money, and you've invested it somehow. Those assets can transfer after you're gone, but you have to put the plans in place. And usually it is paying a small fee, $250, $350, in order to get that to transfer on death is what it's called, TOD. TOD, transfer on death. And so a transfer on death, you pay to have this set up so that whenever you pass away, then it will transfer, but it's not automatically, but it'll transfer to whomever you want it to transfer to. So with TOD, here's how that works. You set it up, and after you're gone, whoever is named as TOD, they have to go down, show a death certificate, their ID, and then it will transfer, the account will transfer over to them. And it can be more than one person if that's what you want. Now, relatedly is something called a POD. Let me step back, though, and tell you the ROS, right of survivorship, that really is automatic. They're just going to take the other person off the account. TOD is not, accounts are frozen, and you have to wait until the death certificates come in, and then it will transfer. POD stands for payable on death. Payable on death, POD. And again, it does not automatically transfer. Where would you have a POD? You can have PODs on checking, savings, sometimes CDs at banks. So predominantly there's type of liquid account, money markets. That's another one. POD, here's how that works, is the account's frozen. They have to wait for the death certificate to come in, and then it's going to pay out. In other words, the bank will close the checking account and issue a check to whomever it's payable on death. But that is another way to avoid the asset from getting wrapped up in the probate process that we're getting ready to explore. The last wonderful way is by naming beneficiaries where you can. So where can we name beneficiaries? And what are beneficiaries? Beneficiaries are people who would take over the account or it would pay out to after you're gone. And you'll see beneficiaries with annuities. You will see beneficiaries with life insurance. You will see beneficiaries with IRAs and 401ks, 403bs, all those retirement accounts. Now, here's the kicker with your beneficiaries. You have to name them in order to avoid the court probate process. So if you don't have your beneficiaries named, or if your beneficiary has passed away and you didn't have a contingent or a backup, then what's going to happen is that asset will matriculate into that probate process. So beneficiaries are wonderful. They do avoid the probate process as long as the person is alive that you named, and here in North Carolina, as long as they're not a minor. Now fast forward. And I love teaching in stories. So let's talk about my mom for a minute. And her mom, my grandmother. You know, I remember having this conversation with my mother and my dad. And I talked about wills and how they go through probate, and I did not want to have to handle it. And my mother said, well, you know, it wasn't that difficult when your grandmother passed away, her mom. And I remember saying, Mom, did you hire a lawyer to help you? Yeah, I did. Do you remember how much you paid the lawyer, Mom? Yeah, about $15,000. Okay, Mom, I don't want to handle it, and I'm going to hire a lawyer, and we're going to lose all that from our inheritance unless we do something different. And now my grandmother, of course, was in Pennsylvania. It is different. This is the hard part. It's different from state to state when it comes to probate. Each state has their own little nuances and their own little requirements and all the hoops you have to jump and their laws. North Carolina's is not the friendliest, I will tell you. There's no minimum threshold for what goes through probate. It could be a $500 car, for example. It could be a $147 refund check that goes through probate. It doesn't matter here in North Carolina. However, my mom said to me, well, you know, your grandmother had me on her checking account. So when she passed away, I could still write the checks for her funeral expenses. Well, Mom, here's the thing. When Grandma put you on her checking account, and even if she did things like put you on her house, her car, her stocks, when you're on there as another individual, you are an owner. And so what that means is it's really not Grandma's asset anymore. Oh, my mom said, well, it didn't matter, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she continued to try to simplify the process. And it does make it simpler when somebody else is on there. But imagine this. You're joint on something and there's an ROS. My mom got all the money. And what's her obligation with it? None. No obligation to pay funeral expenses. No obligation to pay off any debts. No obligation to share it with my uncle. And so any good lawyer this day and age will tell you, you really do not want to have anyone on your assets other than you. If they need to have access while you're alive, use a power of attorney. We discussed that back in planning on purpose. And you want to make sure that when you pass away, as many of your assets will flow by one of these four methods, ROS, TOD, POD, or beneficiaries, versus putting somebody else on there. You know, when you put somebody else on there, if they get a divorce, it could be a marital asset that you lose. It's theirs. If they're in a car accident for texting and driving, they're sued, the insurance won't cover it. It's their asset. It doesn't matter that it also has your name on it. You can lose part of your asset, maybe even all of it. If, God forbid, that individual passed away before you, yes, it can become part of their estate. So there are lots and lots and lots of many reasons why we don't, as lawyers, good practicing lawyers don't recommend that you would put anybody else on your account except for, of course, your spouse. But then you have to take all these other precautions over here. So let's get to Ashley's dad. Now, Ashley's dad went and he had his last will and testament drafted. He had two kids, just wanted everything equally divided. And Ashley was the oldest, and so he named her as the executor, if you're a male, executrix, if you're a female, in his will, which meant she was in charge of handling everything, the distributions and paying off his debts and getting assets transferred out of his name into the name of his estate. He took a copy of his will over to Ashley. And he says, Ashley, listen, here's my will. I want you to promise me whenever I die that you will make sure that everything is quickly, easily, and equally divided between you and your brother. Die? Dad, there is nothing wrong with you. Here, give me that thing. I promise when the time comes that I will do whatever you want that it says in this thing, but I'm just going to go put it up for now. So, of course, they drop the subject forever. You know, nobody really likes talking about this stuff. So, 3 months later, Dad died unexpectedly of a massive heart attack. And Ashley grabbed the will, and the first thing she did was she went over to the funeral home. And when she sat down with the funeral director, she was informed that they had to have payment in full for the funeral services. Well, how much is that going to be? Ashley said, $14,000, the director said. Oh, my gosh. Ashley said, I don't have that kind of money on hand. I know. Dad has a bank account right across the street at the local bank. I'll run over there since I'm the executor, executrix. And I will just get the money and I'll be right back to pay the bill. So Ashley leaves the funeral home. She walks into the bank, hands the banker the will, explains that she's the executrix of the will, and asks to take $14,000 out of her dad's banking account. And the banker looks at her and says, Ashley, I'm so sorry. But you see, your dad's accounts, they're frozen. You have to go through that court probate process. And once you get all the paperwork in order and the court signed off on it, you got to come back here and our lawyers will take a look, make sure everything is okay. And then we'll be able to give you access to the account, but that's going to be quite a while. Oh my gosh, Ashley thought. What in the world am I going to do? I know, she thought. My dad's financial advisor, Roy, he and I went to school together. I'll just go over and I'll see Roy, and I'm sure he'll be able to help me out. So she goes to see Roy, walks in, explains to him what's going on, and he says, Ashley, I'm sorry. You take a baseball bat to my head, and there's nothing I can do either. You see, all your dad's accounts, they're frozen. You have to go through that court probate process. You have to get the necessary paperwork. We have a lot of paperwork to do on our side, too. And once we get through that process, then we'll talk about how you handle that account. Oh, no, Ashley thought. So she walked back over to the funeral home where she slid across three of her credit cards to pay for her father's funeral. Now, something interesting happened at her dad's funeral. One of her dad's longtime friends came over and said, Ashley, listen, I know this is probably not the best time to talk about this, but we've been looking for a house to buy. You see, our daughter Mary is moving back to town, and we're looking for an investment property, and we think your dad's house is the ideal location, great curb appeal, and so if you and your brother don't have any plans, we'd love to buy your dad's house. Oh, gosh, Ashley said, you're right. Probably not the best time to talk about this. But I tell you what, why don't we catch up in a few days, and if we can agree upon a price, well, I don't see why we can't go ahead and sell it. I mean, we don't have any plans for it anyway. So sure enough, they did. They caught up in a few days, and they talked, agreed upon a price. So Ashley called up the title company to arrange for the closing. And when she called, the attorney got on the phone and said, "Listen, Ashley, I'm sorry. Just because you're the executrix in your dad's will does not give you the legal authority to sell your dad's house. You got to get through that probate process. You got to talk to your brother. There's a lot of hoops that have to be jumped. And once you're ready, call us back and let us know." You all can only imagine how frustrated Ashley was. I mean, she had already promised her dad she would get through this process quickly and easily and get everything divided equally. But she can't get past the first two in order to get it all divided out. So Ashley actually came to our firm. She was referred by her accountant. And when we sat down with Ashley, we told her the same thing we tell everybody. And that is, when you die, and this is true, whether you have a will or no will at all, you have to go through that probate process in order to get assets that are in your loved one's name out of their name. So for Ashley, she's trying to get these assets out of her dad's name, and that means we have to go through the court probate process. She says, "Well, where in the world do we start?" Well, Ashley, it starts with finding the original will. "Do you have the original?" "Well, I have a copy," she said. "Nope. Copy will not work. North Carolina requires that the will is an original." And to make things smoother, I hope it is, I hope that it has been notarized. She says, "Well, let's take a look at the copy." Now, her dad's will had been notarized. See what happens when they are not notarized. When they're not notarized, they are not self-authenticating. And what that means is there's another legal hoop that has to be jumped. So put Ashley on pause for just a minute and fast forward with me to, we're going to call her Paula. I met Paula at a seminar I was holding, and Paula came up to me and she says, "Listen, my mom passed away. She had a will. I took it to the court. And they told me I had to locate the witnesses. The witnesses had to come in and verify that that was their handwriting on the will, that my mom was competent when she signed it, and that she did it of her own volition. And of course, that she was over age 18. And so Paula went on to tell me she tried to locate the witnesses, and one of them has died. She predeceased her mom. Paula said, "You know, when I went back to the clerk of court and said, 'Hey, listen, I tried to locate the witnesses like you told me to. I found one of them, but the second one has already died.' The clerk of court told me, 'Well, in that case, I'm sorry, Paula, but your mom's will cannot be upheld. We're going to have to treat this like she died without a will.'" "What?" Paula said. "Yep, I'm sorry. If the witnesses cannot come in and authenticate the will, then it's like she died without a will." Now, the process the clerk of court is going through is proving the will. That's probate means. We're proving the will. We're proving that it's valid. When you have it notarized in North Carolina and it's signed in front of two witnesses, then it's self-authenticating. In other words, the clerk doesn't make the two witnesses come in so long as both they and the person signing signed in front of the notary public. However, in Paula's case, her mom and the witnesses did not sign in front of a notary, which means the laws of North Carolina dictate that the witnesses come in to attest that the signature on there is Paula's mom's signature. So when one of the witnesses cannot come in, even if they can attest to the fact that they knew the other witness, and yep, that was the other witness's handwriting, it won't work. It fails. That will fail, and the court will not uphold it. Instead, they default to what's called intestate laws. Now, let me give you a couple of interesting facts. The United States, and this, these are from studies we've talked about before, 2020, more than 70% of Americans over age 18 do not have a will. Interestingly, more than 55% of individuals in the U.S. who are over age 55 do not have a will. We're procrastinators. We're dreamers. We think we're going to live forever. But you know what? Do not fear. If you don't have a will, the state has a plan for you. Every state has a legal plan for what happens to your assets. Now, it might not be what you want, but the state will dictate exactly what happens. In North Carolina, if the will is not valid or if you die without a will, the intestate laws follow somewhat the family tree. Now, a lot of married people think that if they die, everything just goes to their spouse, and that's not the case. Now, we do have what's called a marital allowance, and so the first $60,000 of the estate assets do go to the spouse. But if we're over $60,000, of course, debts have to be paid first, and then the remainder is divided based on who all in your family tree is alive. For example, if your spouse, of course, is alive and your parents are alive, your spouse gets half and the parents get half. Your in-laws, if you have children and you don't have any in-laws, then your spouse gets half and your children divide equally the half. Your biological children. And that's not always what people want. They want to support their spouse. Maybe they don't want their assets going to their children who might be estranged. I can assure you 99% of the time it will be a problem for your poor spouse if half the assets are going to your parents, which are her in-laws, because she needs or he needs those assets, and they're usually ones that you two have worked for together for your marriage. So fix all this. How at least do we make sure that if something happens to us, that our assets go to our loved ones, to the people that we want them to go to? And that is a will. Now, there are other ways, and there are ways to avoid probate. We're going to talk about that in the future, but I want you to understand first what probate looks like. Now, probate with a will is almost identical to probate without a will in terms of the process itself. With a will, you file it with the clerk of court, and they have to declare that it's valid. And this really raises a problem when you have an out-of-state will. Wills are very state-specific. I was talking with somebody yesterday, and they were from Alabama, had a will that's 20 years old from Alabama, and they haven't updated it. And she was having she told me it was a risky procedure, and she wanted to know what would happen. I said, well, that old Alabama will come to play. And the clerk of court here in North Carolina, they're the judge, so whatever county you live in, the clerk of court will review, after you're gone, your Alabama will. And they're going to read it and interpret it in light of the laws of Alabama, because judges can do that. And they're going to determine whether or not it's valid. If it's not valid under the laws of Alabama, it's going to fail, and then the North Carolina intestate laws will kick in. if it's valid, then they're going to follow the will to the specifications that you have written it, and it'll go through the probate process. And she says, oh my gosh, either way, the assets would be frozen, right? Yep, you're right. And my husband, he wouldn't have access to our checking account, and he couldn't sell our car, and he'd have to get through that probate process, right? You're right. But I told her I was believing no problems were going to occur with her procedure. And once she got through the procedure, then we needed to get her on the right path. So let's look at what would happen if we have a will or no will, what that probate process looks like. So we're going to pick up with Ashley's story. Now, Ashley, of course, figured out really quickly that her dad's assets were frozen. And she came to us looking for direction and help. And we told her, Ashley, listen, whenever you die, whether you have a will or no will, assets have to get out of your name. And that's through that court probate process. So where do we start? She said, well, it's going to start with a lot of paperwork. You see, the courts here in North Carolina have particular forms that have to be completed along the way. We'll get busy drafting those. Now, your brother has to sign off on part of those, and we'll send those out to him. I know he lives in Washington State, and we have to wait for those to come back signed from him. And then once they're back, then we'll call you back in and we'll go from there. But in the meantime, I need you to come up with a list of all of your dad's assets, because you see, when we're about 90 days into this process, the clerk of court requires us to file something called a preliminary inventory of your dad's assets. And the clerk wants to know what assets he had and also what was the value of the asset on his date of death. So you're going to have some digging to do, but start working on that list, and if you need anything, let me know. All right, she says, and off she goes. Now we get busy on our end. We start drafting all of those documents. By the time we have them sent out to her brother and back, it's now 2 months after her dad has passed away. And, of course, everything stays frozen throughout this process. So we bring Ashley back in, and she says, okay, now what do I do? Well, Ashley, here are the papers that you need in order to open your dad's estate. Now, the clerk won't let us just fax them in. There's no electronic filing here. You're going to have to go down to the clerk of court, make an appointment, and you're going to have to go to the county where your dad lived. Now, I know that's 3 hours from where you live, but it's what's required. Not any county can handle this. You have to go where your dad resided. Now, when you get down there, Ashley, they're going to review everything, make sure it's all correctly filled out, that you signed everything, and then they're going to have you take an oath. They're going to make sure that you qualify to serve as an executor. You know, not just anybody can serve as an executor here in North Carolina. And so I'm not worried about you, but they'll have you raise your hand. You'll take an oath. You have a high fiduciary duty. And then once they're done with all the paperwork, they'll mail it back to us, and then we'll go from there. Great, she says. So off she goes, and she goes down to the clerk of court, does her business down there. By the time she is back, and we have all the paperwork back, it is now 2 more months, so 4 months after her dad had passed away. And, of course, everything's still frozen during this process. So we call Ashley in. And she sits down and she says, okay, now what do I do? You can tell she's chomping at the bit. She's really anxious to move things forward like most anybody would be. So we hand her a small stack of papers. They're called letters of administration. And we tell Ashley, Ashley, here are the letters that you need to do all those things you were trying to do before. So you can now go to your dad's bank and hand these to them, and they will work on getting you access to his account. And go see Roy his financial advisor. He'll start the paperwork to transfer those over to you and your brother. Oh, and Ashley, call up that friend and let that friend of your dad's know you can sell the house now. Great, she says. Now, one other thing, Ashley, is you have to get a tax ID number. That's for the state, because as money comes in and money goes out and assets may make money in the meantime, the government still wants you to report any type of potential taxes. So go get an EIN number. Here's the website. And then you have to go open an account in the name of your dad's estate. And take any cash that he had on hand, and you're going to put it all in there. And then you're going to, if you had any checks come in, like refund checks or what have you, deposit those checks into the estate account. Oh, but be really careful. You have to keep track of every single penny coming into this account, because when we get towards the end of this probate, we have to do what's called a final accounting with the clerk of court. And they're going to sit down with the bank statements, and they are going to make sure that every penny that came in matches every single penny that went out. They won't even let you be 1 cent off. They will not let us close the estate. So make sure to keep up with all your receipts. I'd even recommend making copies of any checks and noting everything you can. All right, she says. So off she goes. She starts running around. She goes to the banks, cashes out those accounts and gets the check. She sets up an estate account, deposits it in. She goes to see Roy. He gets things going on his investment side of things. But guess what happened when she called up that friend and wanted to sell that house? Ashley, I'm sorry. I didn't have months to wait. Remember, I told you my daughter, she was moving back. And so we went ahead and we bought another house. We don't need your dad's house anymore. I sure hope you can find somebody to buy your dad's house. You know, Ashley knows we tell her story. It gives you all great insight into these beginning processes of probate. But, you know, when I talk about probate, I'm always asked two questions. Number one, how long is this going to take my family to get through? And number two, how much is this going to cost? Well, here's what we know. Every single estate takes us months to years to get through this process. And, of course, it depends on a lot of different things. There are all these outside entities we cannot control, and how quickly can they get those assets cashed out or transferred? Anybody disagrees about what's going on, probate is public. People can go and pull the file, see what your will said, see your debts are. They can see who your beneficiaries are, all of your assets. Anybody can challenge it because it's in the court already. And so if anybody challenges it, everything comes to a halt until the judge steps in and can resolve it and force it forward. However, what I can tell you is on average here in North Carolina, most of the states that we handle take us about a year to a year and a half to get through. Now, the longest one I know of has been going on for probably 14 years now. It's not one of mine, thankfully. It's one of my client's brothers. Her brother passed away, and I don't know all the holdup, but she's frustrated because it has taken them this long. And she's been looking for a way to avoid that process, and that's exactly what we have been working with her with. Now, in terms of cost, this is interesting. You can go out there and look at average cost. Now, of course, it varies from state to state. It ranges from 3 to 10% of the total estate assets. Now, I'm not very good with numbers, so let's give it a little bit of perspective. If your estate is $100,000, that's all there is, that's all that's going through this court probate process, how much is 10%? Yes, $10,000. I don't know about you all, but that sure seems like a lot of money to lose when I'm just trying to get my assets to my family to begin with. Well, I think Ashley thought the same thing. And so when we look at these numbers, there have been some studies that have drilled down to see what really makes up this 10%. And there are common things that certainly you and I would understand. So, for example, court costs and filing fees. Now, North Carolina, they doubled theirs a couple of years ago, two, 3 years ago. So now they max out. It's a total of up $6,000. But it depends on the total assets. But I'll tell you, it doesn't even take $1 million in assets going through probate, and we're paying $6,000. Executors and executrix like Ashley, they don't like to work for free. And so North Carolina laws dictate how much they're entitled to be paid to get all these assets through the probate process. In North Carolina, they can have up to 5% not only of all the assets coming into the estate, but all the debts that are paid out of the estate. Then, if you're like me, you're not very good with numbers, you have an accountant that's tracking all the dollars and the cents, because when we get to the point of trying to close the estate, I don't want to have to worry about being a penny off here or a penny off there. If you're like Ashley and you're selling real estate, we've got real estate fees involved. Oh my gosh, and guess what? The year you pass away, if you have income, Uncle Sam still wants your income taxes. And so now we're paying a CPA to draft your income tax returns because those get paid from the estate. But guess where the largest cost comes from? In fact, some studies have reported up to 70% of the total cost to get an estate through the probate process goes to pay the fees to the lawyers. You got it. The lawyers are making all the money on the probate estates. Seems awfully self-serving, you're probably thinking. Well, you know what? You're probably right. A lot of people have shared with me, told me, well, why didn't the lawyer tell me that when I went to him and said I wanted a will? That there was a way to avoid probate, that he stood or she stood to make so much money from my estate that would take it from my family to get them through this process. Why didn't they tell me about ROS and TOD and POD and making sure I had beneficiaries on as much as I can? Well, maybe because their business plan is to help families through the probate process. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. There are some families who say, you know what? I don't care what happens when I'm gone. There are some families who are, I'm going to say, upside down. They have more debt than they have assets, and it doesn't make any sense to go a different route. There are some families who are like our family and have a special needs loved one, and they don't have the resources to invest now to protect their special needs loved one, and it has to go through probate in order to protect them on the backside after they're gone. So there's a definite need, but there's also a definite need for education, because no one can make a good decision until they know what they don't know. And that's what Thomas Walters law firm prides themselves on, is knowing what we don't know. You know, we're going to keep digging deeper into this probate process. The North Carolina Estate Administration Manual is probably at least 3 inches thick. And while I won't bore you with the whole 3 inches, I do want to provide essentially more of a self-help for people who are trying to get through the probate process. The probate process is a legal process. That means here in North Carolina is, if you don't know what forms you need to get started, if you can figure it out on the internet, our forms are all available there, but you don't know how to answer or fill out the forms because they are legal forms. Or if you get it wrong on the form, the clerk of court is not available to direct you. They cannot answer your questions. They cannot tell you how to correct what's wrong. They cannot tell you what to do. And the reason why is because our clerk of court is the judge over the estate division. So can you imagine if I handed you all a will and I told you, you have a fiduciary duty, go down to the courthouse, good luck, bye-bye. You got to get it right or else you're in trouble. Yeah. You'd feel pretty panicked. And you, like a lot of people, would hire us lawyers in order to help you get through that process more efficiently and to make sure that you're doing your due diligence so that you don't mess up this fiduciary duty. One of the main reasons I personally, even though I'm a lawyer, really don't like probate is because it doesn't matter how much or how little money you have, death and money do strange things to people. And when you amplify that by a delay and by assets being frozen, by unexpected occurrences, when somebody challenges, by the unforeseen will failing because the court decided it wasn't valid. And people can see what their loved ones' wishes were, but they're never going to happen. Let me tell you, it is very emotionally charged. And it reflects not only among the heirs, but often deflects back to us lawyers. You hear the frustration, you hear the anger, you hear the petty complaints, you live in a dynamically charged environment in probate that honestly is really close to what people go through emotionally with a divorce. And you pile it up on top of the grief in losing their loved one. That's why I'm a proponent of avoiding that process. It's not, for me, it's not a difficult legal process. I like to keep the peace in the families. I want to make sure that everything is as simple and easy as possible for our families. So in a few weeks, we're going to learn how to do that, but we're going to navigate the next time we get together in a couple of weeks exactly how do we handle a probate. Where does it start? What do we do? And we're going to get down to a few more nuts and bolts. So this is going to just be a two-part series before we then launch in how do we avoid probate. So again, this is Stacey Walters. I am a North Carolina estate planning attorney with a multi-state law firm, Thomas Walters. We have offices in 5 states and we hold licenses to practice in several states. And all we do is we focus on estate planning and wills and trust. It has been my pleasure and privilege to be with you today on this journey. I hope that you have a fabulous weekend. Thank you for letting me be your legal guide and happy estate planning. We'll talk with you soon.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.